You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded.
Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast and Little Saigon Official and Discover Little Saigon and LA for everybody, right?
Yep.
We today wanted to talk about this idea of getting together and figuring out. So this is an episode of the Vietnamese podcast, but I'm here with two biggest content creators in SoCal, right?
I don't think biggest. Okay, it's just more.
Really? You don't think you're one of the...
Which is the louder ones.
Who's active, bigger? Who's bigger than
really
you?
Really active.
Yeah, which is active.
Who's bigger than you, Chris?
No. We're here to find more bigger ones.
You want to stay humble all the time. I can't let you be humble.
It's not me. I don't make content. It's the platform. So this is about platform, right?
All right. This is an episode about platform.
It is, because like you have a platform called the Vietnamese Podcast that you bring on all voices from all across the globe to talk about their achievements and what they input into culture and their upbringing, their life, their journey, this whole bits and pieces. And you bring all these fragments together.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the bigger puzzle of what happened after. Because everybody wants to talk about the after.
Okay. I know, and we're stuck in that.
And then we're stuck in that.
We're stuck in that. And that's why we're here today, because we want to get out of this. I want to talk about the evolution of the Vietnamese culture. Now, then, inside of Vietnam, it's already happening.
Because, no, we can't talk about, we've been talking about the after, we talk about the now, who's doing what, and you brought everybody here, and then now you're still meeting people doing now, right? And now, what is now going to do for the future?
And well, don't you have to work on the now, and the now just produces the future?
And that's why these conversations has to happen.
Yeah.
Because if you don't talk about now, the generations growing up trying to figure this out have to hear about what's happening now or how we feel now about what was the past going forward, correct? Because this is all very confusing, because no matter where you live throughout the globe, being Vietnamese and trying to understand now that, you know, you grew up American, Australian, German, French, you know, whatever you came from, or just in Vietnam itself being like, okay, everybody says, oh, they've always been comfortable being Vietnamese. Of course, they're in Vietnam. Let's just speak out the obvious, okay? I'll be comfortable in California versus I am in Indiana, because I'm fucking from California, you know what I mean? But it's a comfort level, so let's state the obvious, okay? Now, how do we now feel comfortable about calling ourselves Vietnamese, okay? And culture.
Why are we so obsessed with this?
We're obsessed because everybody's here has at one time or another had an identity problem. I mean, find out who you really are, what you want to be, and, you know, because it's like that question your counselor asks you, you know what I mean? What do you want to be when you grow up? I don't fucking know. Right? Some kids have an automatic answer. I want to be an astronaut, a fireman, fucking porn star. Who knows? You know what I mean? But none of us had the answer.
So I was in New York over the weekend, and I was doing this thing called Stories We Carry with Columbia University. Mm-hmm. And we brought the community on the East Coast, Vietnamese East Coast, together to talk about creativity. And just being around all of these Vietnamese people, I thought about you guys. I'm like,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I thought deeply. I'm like, the contrast of how comfortable you are and I am being in SoCal, the powers and the strength and numbers that we experience, very different from the East Coast or Eastern European Vietnamese. It's very, very different.
Yes.
Right? So then this conversation about, like, what do we do globally to push an agenda? An agenda is what? I want the branding aspect of Vietnam to, like, grow. And then we had this conversation. We're like, how do you make it grow when you don't know where the here is? We don't have a platform. We don't have an agenda. We don't have a council. We don't have a governing body to really push whatever whatever sort of fragmentation is happening.
And the odd thing is, like, outside our community, they think our community is so united, yeah. so uplifting, so kumbaya, so together and trying to help each other in which way, which there's a point to that.
We are, though.
We are, you know, because we have these conversations, we're willing to. We will not, you know, let each other down. But as far as like the perception that we entirely just get together, there's so many organizations that are on opposite of each other here, right? Like anything.
How do you feel about that?
I think a couple of things, like Chris's opening statement when he says like, we're trying to figure out what happened. We got so fragmented. I feel like when you're removed from the motherland, like how we were, like something broke in our identity and we've been trying to figure out how to gather that. So then we built cities, we built Little Saigons to help us at least like live day to day. But then now we've gotten better. So we reached a point where we can think like, okay, so what's next creatively? Or like we're not hungry anymore. But something broke when we left our main
mainland. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think also what Chris said, I forgot the other point, but he says like, everyone thinks that Little Saigon's so united. To me, people from here don't see it, but to me, like you guys are, if you're a decent person and you work well with others and you like function in this community, you're not going to get left behind. Like even when I lost my job immediately, whether it was Chris or the guy down the street or someone else saying, do you need a job here at my market? Do you need a job at my boba shop? Go reply at Santa Ana. Like you're not left behind in Little Saigon, you know? Like the resources here are immense, more than any place else. Like people get off of cruises from Vancouver and then yearn for a taste of Vietnam so badly that they flood Little Saigon with their last days here. They go south on the freeway instead of up north, going home immediately because they like want a taste of what is built and made here. So I think like before and what Ken said, like back then, I used to think like right now you're thinking globally and internationally with Viets, but then there was a point when maybe that's jumping the gun. Cause remember back then I would ask like, what about the other Southeast Asians? And you would tell me like, we have to fix what's in our backyard first. So is SoCal, did we fix the brokenness that are fragments yet or something? I'm thinking like, that's where my head is.
So the word broken, that's the thing. I don't think it's about it being broken or not because it just modified it its own way and went in its way, right? So you can argue it's broken. Like I can argue is that we weren't removed from Vietnam. We left. So let's just get that straight. You know what I mean? Because some people say escape, left, or whatever. Nobody got removed. Okay? Because removed means ejected. They can argue that. So, but we our families choose to leave of whatever circumstances. Now we have a choice to do what we need to do. Okay? And nobody's getting booted anywhere here. They choose to leave. And then when growing up, that's what we were always talking about. We chose to leave our own culture at one point or another in our life. I didn't get rejected. I maybe wasn't accepted. In our own minds, I wasn't accepted, but nobody booted me. Saying, no, you don't belong with us. Fuck you. You're like a fucking me chang guy, you know? Yeah, they said, yeah, you act very white. You act very banana. You act very fucking coconut. Whatever you want to call it. All these things we grew up with hearing to ourselves, right? Because why we acclimate to the American culture and society and, you know, being like, okay, I'm in California. I like surfing. I like skating. I like cars. You know what I mean? Is that too not Vietnamese?
Yeah. I mean, I was in Vietnam at the beginning of the year and I have very close friends say, you guys are addicted to identity angst. You guys are addicted to like all you can talk about is identity. Where is the creation of the future? What are you doing to like move the needle to create? And I'll bring some stories. And there's a musician out of New York. Her name is Hien. And Hien is a Hungarian-born vocalist, musician, went to Berkeley out in the East Coast. Amazing musician. She's just creating. She's taken vocal sounds from the past and she's putting it on modern music. And she's singing Hungarian lyrics. Beautiful, future-forward creation. Dujan, the film director, is from Czech Republic, and he created this like really cool film that is talking about like markets being, you know, like a football talk of Czech Republic, where Vietnamese people buy and sell fake goods. And I was like, these are cool stories. They're doing stuff, but they're beloved in Czech Republic. The Vietnamese community is like, he said that there's 100,000 or 200,000 people, but they're beloved in the Czech Republic. And I was really thinking about when you put all of these stories together, if we can see a glimpse of what other people are experiencing, maybe it might help us.
Well, see, I'm gonna play off of that. When you say the word beloved, you know, and you can talk about most communities in America, and given even Westminster, Garden Grove, you know, I don't care, San Diego, San Jose, New Orleans, Texas, right? They're now beloved. They're part of the community. Right. Okay. They're now beloved, as your right. words is. But when it fought in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they were being chased out. They were being like, oh, you don't belong here. You know, now they're beloved because we somehow found our way to contribute as good people as we are, entrepreneurs, you know, good natured, helping, and as violent as we are, confrontational, you know, abrasive, you know, it all combines of what our tenacity is about what we want to be doing. Okay. We didn't belong. We made a place. Okay. Like there's no more Chinatowns growing. There's little pockets of, like you said, they made a marketplace to serve their community, but as serving community, they served other communities, right? Because like you said, it's a hub for fake goods, like how New York has Canal, how, you know, Chinatown, LA, you know, Santee Street or whatever you want to call it. You can get your goods anywhere. Now, Little Saigon had its hub for whatever sourcing you wanted it to do growing up. I don't care if you're, you know, there's supply for every state out of this, you know, from nail supplies to just, you know, products, goods that those states didn't have. This became a national distribution for not just goods, but culture. How many times did you hear in the 80s and 90s, all the states looked up to California? They might not admit it, but like the fashion, the music.
I mean, you see it on Instagram now. You see like all these Asian Americans like all over the country talking about how awesome like SoCal is, but it's just funny. Like some of these creators like put it against, you know, comedy. But the thing is like, are we at a standstill right now? That's what I want to know. Are we at a standstill? Are we creating new stuff? Like when I think about Vietnam and fashion in Vietnam, I see so much growth. And why? Because there's so many young people and there's so much creation happening. So they don't have to worry.
They have no hangups.
They don't have any hangups. They're just creating.
Identity void like we do.
And so are we stuck in this weird like culture trip? Or can we break outside of it and go, you know what? Fuck this like being addicted to identity angst, right?
Okay, so.
We should move beyond it.
I've learned in the last few months that the word we doesn't include another age gap in another timeline. Meaning, the different gens, right? You talk a kid that's 19 and this conversation, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so it's not identifiable to the we's.
So are we just a bunch of old guys just 100%. Talking about like...
Well, we're an important one. We know our war-torn parents and we know that we're wondering where the younger ones are going. So we're in an important group though.
But is it...
To who? They moved on. They say...
Yeah, they don't feel it.
Yeah. So important which way? It's only important you say, hey, you know what we did? Did you know how it became? Or if there wasn't this, there wouldn't be that.
But does it matter?
But the word important, that's important. Like what our parents did is important. Now you pass that on. And how many people say, was that important, right?
Okay. Does it matter?
Does it matter? At the end of the day, does it matter? How the world ticks and moves on.
Okay? Right.
And a lot of people that doesn't know how to pivot. That don't know how to not transfer that anger and that's trauma. Like, man, you guys gotta understand it was like this. We get it. And how many times did you grow up and said, we get it, but dude, it's not us right now. Now we're at that age where the next generation asks, then the next one. Okay, so when you say the word we, that's why I had to stop you real quick because I've met people that we don't affect them. They're not in that convo of
and,
we.
And you got this like new generation of Vietnamese kids that you hoaxing. They come from Vietnam.
Yes.
And they've been here for like 5-10 years. And they're just like, you know, I met some people yesterday that like bought a business, like a real thriving restaurant. Yeah. And all she cares about is making more money.
Correct.
There's no like lingering historical issues with her.
We now have to get back to creating our own path. We're so ingrained in looking about what others are thinking. What others are feeling, what were the perception of us, okay? And that's why they say, yeah, you have that angst, you have that thing, because you still have that hang of what others think of you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but also, there was a time in your life where you didn't give a fuck about what people thought.
Yeah.
But how can you revert it? You know, when, like say, let's talk about the 90s. In the 90s, everybody knows Ken promoted clubs. I raced cars. We went to clubbing. We went to clubs. We didn't belong. We created Asian clubs, Asian nights.
We lived in this bubble.
Yes. But why? Because, like, you know, we didn't feel like we belong at the certain clubs in downtown LA. We didn't know how to dress right, get right, or get in. Because remember,
we could not get in.
Because remember, back then, the doorman could fucking tell you, nah, you're not cool enough. Remember Vertigo?
Are you ugly?
yeah,
that's right. You're too fat.
Or you got too many guys.
Yeah.
Come on, Ken. Why are you bringing like five guys? You know better than that.
Yeah. Or, you know.
Yo, why do you got five Asian guys with you, Ken?
Okay. If you don't think you have thick skin, let's get you a group of eight. Three girls, five guys. They'll let the three girls in. The five guys will wait. An hour. It'll be like fucking 12:30, 1 o'clock before they got in. They want the eye candy in first.
But look.
And that's what it is.
Well, why do those stories matter to any young people today?
It matters because sometimes they might not, once they leave their area, their comfort zone, they're going to have to deal with real life about people. Look, you're Asian. You're Vietnamese.
You'll never be white here. You'll never be white.
No, that's not something I tell them. Okay. Being white means like you, that's a shit they used to say to me. So I'm never going to say that to them.
But then why do you say that? Why did you just say you'll never be white? Like what? Because that's a perspective that you carry. Why do you say that? And Chris, that's not important to you, but obviously Dana just said it and it's important to her.
And I'm trying to stop people from transferring that you're never going to be white. You're never going to be this.
But that's how they feel.
I think because of our genetics, or how we look, like we will always look like an outsider. We can be as educated, as well-spoken, have no accent, but you always, in some degree, always...
But then that's the question. Is whiteness associated with being American?
Yes.
Maybe not anymore.
No, totally does. We're living in an enclave. Like, if you... Come on, guys. If you live in Texas, like, somewhere in, like, the big cities, like Houston, Dallas... No. Being white is an American thing. Are you kidding me? Like,
and that's
you don't see it because we're living here.
And then that's why it goes back to now. You're having a conversation. Why do we have this identity? Because this is still going on. This is still going on as we speak. Are you American? Are you white? Are you patriotic? Right? Okay. And that's why we have this thing. Like, well, where do my allegiance lie? To my culture, to my skin color, or to the way I live my life? Okay. If you are now fully a serviceman, I don't care if you're a fireman.
Military,
police, or now a serviceman for city, you know, you just do stuff for the city, okay? And you live this whole American adjacent to whiteness. And then people accuse you. You're like, you know what? My whole fucking culture rejects me. I just lean in, right? But then in the 80s and 90s, you were the token kid trying to fit in, right? And that's why when the people who have that view and vision of us, they're not wrong. But then when they get here, open their business, now they're the minority business. They're thriving, yes, because they're serving a minority dish, a boba, a Vietnamese dish. They're serving a minority offering to people that aren't this. They're thriving because why?
But you know, some people don't care. Most Vietnamese people don't care. Most Japanese people don't care. Most Koreans don't care. They're doing their thing, right? Why do we care? And why is it so important that we move the culture forward? And is it an exercise in futility? Because here's what I mean. While other people are doing their thing, we're sitting here trying to like move the culture forward. What's the point of that?
What's the point of it?
Why do we yearn for it so badly?
Yeah, why are we, the three of us, dedicating our whole lives and existence to this?
Could you open a physical shop to push culture and preserve and have a place for culture?
And why do we spend so much time on this?
You spent your whole life looking at magazine and trying to be something that, you know, you look up to, aspire to, right? They say project it and... dream it, and you're right. You have your vision board of things how you want. You want that car, you want that wealth, you want that thing. It's just posters, you know, you will it, right? And now going back, like I look at this as a community to be branded. We are Vietnamese. We are Vietnamese American. We are from.
Why is that important to you?
Why? Because there's some part of us that all was complacent at one time.
No, I don't care about all of it. No, you personally.
Same with me. I went through my journey of doing my own shit. Not giving two fucks about what people thought and to create my own path. There's many lanes on the freeway. I'm going to take a few of them. You know what I mean? Sometimes slow, sometimes fast. I'm going to fucking ride it all. And sometimes I'm in the carpool lane with like-minded people. We fucking ride this shit together. You know what I mean? But on the other hand, when I look back at my community and here Little Saigon's approaching 50 years, but yet nobody views it as a tourist destination. Nobody takes pride in the name. They say, oh, we'll go to Little Saigon. And you're so fucking, you're so bolsa. You know, I was like,
I love it.
You're like, Dick, you grew up here. Your family made money here. You live in Laguna in the hills now. And you want to look down as like, oh, I'm slumming it. Fuck you, man.
Okay, so you have this personal itch to make sure the world knows that you
we planted a literal flag and an ideological flag here that we can be a part of this and make part of this to others that we exporting our offerings now. Let's call it that. Because growing up drinking iced coffee was weird. Banh mi was a mess. Fish sauce was fucking god damn it, what the fuck is that, Chino? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. And lap seung was like, what kind of sausage is that? You know what I mean?
All true. Yeah.
All right. So when you grew up all that, now like, oh man, that looks good. What is that? Yeah. Now it's a different fragrance. It's a different smell. It's a different like, and they're all willing to cross cultures.
And I would attribute that to Little Saigon.
No, I attribute it to everybody that's doing their offerings. They're making new fusion stuff. You know what I mean?
Dana.
No. I'm going to stop Dana before I keep pushing. You did this, you did this. Okay.
Wait. Let me hear what she was going to say. What were you going
to
say?
I was just going to say that shift from when fish sauce was pungent to like, oh, what's that fragrant? Now, I would attribute that to this place here. The first banh mi shop that started here. This place skyrocketed that for the rest of the nation.
How?
By championing it, by not giving up on this sandwich and having it replicated throughout the country, this place did it for sure.
Hey, they all jumped on a bandwagon.
Because it money. Worked here.
Because they served a community. It thrived. The community itself shared it with other.
But what
other
you're saying is there was no intention to make it. Yeah.
No.
What he's saying is economics dictated it becoming a product.
A need that was served here in this community. It started to spread out.
But see, that's what I'm saying. There's no intention behind pushing our culture. It's just happening.
But now that's why now.
Why do we need to push this so hard? Why? And I'm asking for myself.
Because
I'm saying like, I'm trying to figure out this formula to say, why are the Koreans doing big things? Why is, this is an episode that I want to do, this idea of Betui, right? Like we young people, I mean, me and you are different. But younger people don't like to eat Betui. They're like, oh, that's gross. But what we don't realize is France, Germany, Italy all have this same dish, all have a variation of this uncooked veal, uncooked young calf. But why can't we look at it and go, that is something that we want to engage in and we want to eat and we want to enjoy it? Because it's very different from like the European dish of veal.
And that's why it's important to have this identity push, because identity is like, okay, like the pâtés, okay? If you tell somebody in the 90s, eat pâté, it's fucking liver, right? You tell them betui, it's like right now, the nem chua, it's having a push, okay? Fermented fucking raw fucking pork.
Raw pork.
Okay, you tell that. Now, I grew up in the era where they looked bad on sushi. Oh, you guys eat raw fish. Go discuss it. We fucking, you're savages. Normal people fucking cook this.
But then you had Nobu. You had Nobu that just flipped the script. Okay. On everybody.
And same thing with everything else. Once it becomes like you have to have that person, like you hosting your guests into breaking bread and saying, this is how it's done. This is how you eat it. This is what it's made of. You educate them and you push that thing where it's not weird anymore.
And why is it important for us to do that for our community?
Because you want, like any business, do you scale? You want to go vertical. You want to go 360 with everything. Okay. Do you want that for our community? Or you want to be this small enclave that, oh yeah, this is Little Saigon.
Okay. So now we're getting to the heart of this.
Yeah.
So we know that this work is important because it helps scale our image throughout the world. And when our image is polished and it's presented back to the real big world, this is the main point. When our image is polished to the main world, it makes business and relationships all around the world a lot easier.
Integration is easier.
We're not looked at as lower, beneath, savages, jungle, whatever that brand and label is, it's now different. Yes. Because we are making it a thing. But now the question that we had this morning is this. Where is the coalition? Where are we bonding? Where is the platform that we can exchange ideas in a very formal and intentional way?
So this discussion is this. If you guys are creators, you guys have products, you have something that lean towards like your roots of being Vietnamese in storytelling and product offerings, I don't care if it's coffee, a jelly drink, candy, a t-shirt, whatever you create that represent the DNA of a Vietnamese person, of the Vietnamese culture. I don't care if it comes from here. You brought it here from the motherland, but like now you bring it forth, your story. You want a place to have that conversation about that. Why you come up with this product? Why did you write that story? Why did you have that song? Why did
you make that movie?
Correct. So what you're asking is a platform, a place, a sum of cohesion where we can all get together and have a discussion.
We don't have that, right?
And to highlight, like I attempt to do that. That's why I repost other people things that do extraordinary things. And extraordinary things to me might not be to the wider world extraordinary, but like, holy shit, they made a movie. They wrote a book. They're in the fucking museum. They're in the Getty. Okay. This photographer, that person from all walks of life that never thought that they had acknowledgement from their community. Most people don't, they would pass like validation. That's not even talking about. But it'd be nice to like, oh, wow, they actually, I'm visible to them. Okay. And now taking what's visible and a product you make, let's make them more visible because as a unit, I'd rather do it together and not leave anybody behind. And if their intention is right to champion it the right way and not appropriate it and take advantage of it, they can always have a platform, right? So you're looking for one cohesive. So do the call out and tell them, ask the public how we do with this.
Yeah. We'd love to know. Can you leave something in the comments? If you watch this far, you understand how engaged this topic is for the three of us. And, you know, you can tell a little bit about your experience growing up in Denver and what you thought of the lack of representation from where you came from.
I mean, like me and my sister, like when you're like one of the rich kids in Denver, they would get to go to California and they'd come back and be like, there's this place called Fukuta. And when you go there, you're safe. Like your what you need is there. Things that like match your taste are there. It's just this place. And here's some goods I brought back. And now I'm going to dye my hair like the girls in OC.
ABG.
And then we're like, wow, you guys are so pretty over there. Why do you guys have this? And we come visit one day. We come visit and then we're like, oh, Bolsa. And we're like, Fukuta. And we're like, oh, your teacher's name is Mr. Nguyen. I've been fighting for someone to... for me to say Nguyen in Denver for so long.
So did it meet your expectations when you got here?
Flooded it with like safety and like place and like, and then, which is still sad because it's the closest I can get to Vietnam, you know?
And that's why a lot of kids that go to Vietnam feels this exact same thing. So the levels of how you feel comfort in your own skin is this. She came from Colorado, her and her sister came here, she felt this. And now the kids that grew up here thought, you know, I grew up very American. All of a sudden now they feel a different way when they go home. Okay, like, wow, Vietnam, look at all the Dangong and speaking the language, stuff I heard. Okay, so.
When I go to Vietnam, I literally feel like when they say fish out of water and then fish returning back into the ocean, like I literally feel like I'm back in the ocean and I'm swimming and my skin is so like
cool. A lot of people say that.
And I feel like I belong and I can eat whatever. I mean, literally can gobble up the plankton of the street food. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like in my element.
A lot of people say that when they go for the first time as an adult. And this makes me wonder, like, I don't know if I'm going to word this right, but I wonder if biologically people were not supposed to leave their motherland. Like our blood probably matches the climate there. So we're more comfortable. Our taste buds eat like the
things that we were designed.
Right.
Yeah. We've been eating for centuries there.
Right. So like if a fish from the Pacific Ocean, if it somehow got displaced and moved into the Atlantic Ocean, it's uncomfortable, like its salt level needs the Pacific. So I feel like biologically, maybe we weren't supposed to leave the motherland. That's why we always all feel that like, when we get there, even if you don't speak it.
But there's this other side of not belonging that creates this further push of our culture because we're living on the furthermost edges of the tundra. We're living on like the border of where the boundaries are. So we are experiencing both being able to speak English, understanding Americanism, understanding like the way we do things in America. But at the same time, we're like really plugged in We're plugged into ringing phones. Mm-hmm. We're plugged into the way Vietnam is, and we're trying to be closer to our motherland.
And it's so frustrating to me to a point where I don't want to live in America any longer.
Me too. I feel the same way. And then people are like, fuck you, go home, go back to the motherland. But
great, gladly.
I wasn't born there. I got obligations here. And I've been accused of trying to push an agenda of, Vietnam. And I'm like, no, it's simple. I was not born there, and I crave and hunger for the way things are said, the way we are accepted in our own bodies, and we don't have to deal with all of this hatred coming out. And I think people in the Midwest or whatever, Vietnamese people, they're just not acknowledging it because it's there. They're living through, because I visit my family in South Carolina, and they date white guys or date white women. And then you could hear the jokes. And I'm like, wait, you're going to take that?
Yeah.
You're going to take that insult right now? Like, you can't sit there. And I look at them and I'm like, I don't want to disrupt your happiness, but that's not healthy.
Yeah. The Midwest is different. In Denver, my sister made the most watered down McMum and still can't sell it because they don't understand the smells. It's the most watered down McMum, but here you can go crazy with it, but the frustration of me, the clash of because I am Vietnamese, and I seek more Vietnamese leaders, and I look around at what you guys did here, so I can figure out when I learn what's in you that allowed Frank to create Fuglta or Chris to create Little Shark Official, it helps me see, oh, that's a Vietnamese thing. Okay, so that's in me. So it helps me understand who I am more in this wonder of who I am. But it's so frustrating to a point because what I am, what my mom taught me, values of Vietnamese people clash so much with Americanism. It clashes all the time. So that's why I drive an hour from LA to be here, just to be here many days of the week, And then on top of that, another thing is in Vietnam, so then we have these in events that we go to, and we all wear our ayahs and we all look really good and we all love it, but then it's weird because in Vietnam I'm like, uncle, are you gonna wear your ayah? He's like,
hell no.
No, give me a white button up. Give me the white button up. I'm not wearing that. It's not a special occasion. It's thit, So but for us, we're loud and proud about it. So we are we overemphasizing? Are we, to me, it's this gap that I am Vietnamese, but I can't be Vietnamese at a university. So let me just be safe here in Bolsa and just come to Bolsa because I can't go to Vietnam yet. It's so frustrating.
So strange for just...
I don't like it here.
I must be for more, no matter where we went in the 90s, when they say, where are you from? I say, Vietnam. I didn't say Orange County. I didn't say Santa Ana. And this is automatic response, because you're just proud to be Vietnamese, right? Because you want other people, wherever you went, maybe there's another Vietnamese person that say, oh, Yik Nam, huh? Just to talk to you. Because there was a lot of times when we did road trips on our racing days, I end up in Bakersfield. I end up in fucking, Arizona, so in the middle of fucking buttfuck Egypt somewhere. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, they'll tell me, go to Wagner. And then we just go there and hang out.
You trust that because they're Vietnam. You're Vietnam.
No, I'm not going to use the word trust, okay? They just there's a kinship of something we can break bread, or familiarity. Because I use the word trust very loosely, and that's not something I use. Trust, you get a good wink when you use it, you know what I mean? So I hate to correct you on all these things, it's just, things that we've gone through, so I take some of the verbiage out, okay? So I'm just saying. But when you go in a room somewhere at an airport, all of a sudden you hear Vietnamese, you tend to gravitate to right? It's the same thing. And that's why when they ask you, where are you from? I said, Vietnamese, you know what I mean? I'm from Vietnam because I was born in Vietnam.
Okay, so today we validated this idea that in order for Vietnamese people globally to do better business, easier to get deals done, that we got to prop up the brand.
Well, we have to have at least some kind of bridge gateway for whatever product and things that are out there being created. And we don't know because this is what we're searching. If you guys are on social media, you have something to present that's legit and you want us to highlight it, talk about it, bring that conversation here. Bring that conversation of your confusion. Bring that conversation of even what we just talked about. Might be just us or it might be a lot of people.
That's what I want to know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on a product and marketing level, I think Chris from Little Second Official is doing the things that are like a material good, right? Like hoodies and hats and all the product is the representation of this pride. For me, it's showcasing human beings that are Vietnamese, the way they're thinking, the way they're constructing what their values are for the Vietnamese culture, sometimes through their work. And, you know, for you, it's really like being on the street walking and experiencing all of this food and all, experiencing this like experiencing experiences inside of these brick and mortar places.
And here's the thing, it might not be part of that this particular conversation, but like, I have more people that's not Vietnamese buy Lo Saigon product.
Really?
Because they enjoy the banh mi, they're hanging out with Vietnamese, they enjoy the culture, they've been back to Vietnam. They come to Lo Saigon because they visited Vietnam and now they get still a taste of Vietnam here.
It's a really good point you bring up. And that idea of having other people buy in, like this brand in LA called Japangelist.
Japangelist.
I wear a Japangelist hoodie.
I have a hoodie, I have a hat.
And why do I wear that?
Okay, because so here's the problem. This take back to the pride. Wherever we visit on vacation, you go to Paris, you buy a Paris shirt.
Right.
You go to New York, you buy New York. You're not from New York. But yet the people who live here are like, oh, should I be wearing where I'm from? Or even the tour, oh, I go, we all have a keepsake somewhere. We all have something to, you know,
cherish our memory.
And so now you have more people that's not Vietnamese that were buying because they came here and visited. They ate some stuff, their friends, their wedding, whatever they had a chance to, you know, enjoy our culture. They want to take a piece back. You know, that's not just food where they digest it and fucking shit it out the next day. And it's something that, you know, it's a candle, it's a cup, you know what I mean? And something to remember their trip. Like us when we go on vacation, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You might take a snow globe, a magnet, whatever it is. But if you look around Bolsa, look around Little Saigon, what's the keepsake you can take back to wherever you came from to make you remember Little Saigon?
It's food. It's for you poop it out. It's food.
No, I'm just saying. That's why I make a wearable good.
Wearable good.
Mm-hmm. That makes something, a keepsake, an ashtray, a cup, something you can take that you can leave there. This is my trip back in 2026. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not going to save toilet paper. Just kidding. Ew. You remember this meal? Just kidding.
No, but that shows you where her mind is. Her mind is on food.
No,
right?
Because if food makes the mark. Okay, look, our biggest entryway into is what
culture,
we have.
Culture, yeah, it's for our food.
But look, we have jewelry, we have services, we have tailors here. When they love the tailors in Vietnam, we've been offering the tailors here for that price of that quality since the day
one.
Here. Yeah. Day one. Okay, you know this.
Tucked away somewhere, I can't find. I need a tailor.
You don't find them because we now. So she's been working on a project, we call it LS Go. So, you know, it's Go Little Scott. Ni Ang Chơi, okay? Ni Ang Chơi just means go, eat, play. Okay, so it's a project that's going to launch in a few months. I haven't told you about it, but what it is, so now you can discover Little Saigon. Even the people who live here don't know where to. If you ask anybody that's a local, where's the top five? Oh, where can I get my shirt made? Where can a mechanic? Where can I get, you know, a seamstress? Where can I get my hair dyed? Who has the best massage? Even as bountiful as nail hair salon. You always ask for a referral.
Ken had to ask where there's firecrackers. You can't find that on Yelp.
I know. I had to ask Dana during Tet, where can I find, I mean, it was like a week after Tet or two, where can I find firecrackers? Dana hooked it up and, I saved the day.
Yeah.
I saved the day.
But then again, you can't go on Yelp and yell because they're illegal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just some things that it's just more accepted here to have and they turn an eye to it, you know, and like right in the street over, the biggest law for Balut, you know, Jingyik Law, and people are like, oh, there's a place there. They've been there for like 35, 40 years. Yeah. Okay. You get fresh Balut of all days and size and when you want it done, right?
The 18 day, the 19 day, the 20 day, 19 days.
And a lot of people that are into aquariums, they didn't know that there's a bunch of fish sellers around this area. They sell flower horns, they sell certain exotic fishes, birds, and stuff like that. It's like, really? He goes, yeah, because why? We service our own industry, but it's not known. So now to get the word out, the word of mouth, let's go. Because why? We're just going to digitize Little Saigon. And if you want to come here and find the best deal and this quality service, but it's up to the merchant to have that hospitality.
So can you do LS Go in the, because you know, there's like 10 other cities that have Little Saigon. You know, there's a woman that wrote a book on like all the Little Saigons of the United States.
Absolutely. So it's just something to onboard on a digital directory.
Yeah.
So that way, if you're feeling with AI, you ask, oh, give them the my or give them shop my Honda specialist. It now goes to because there's Vietnamese have crazy mechanics.
But how do you update this stuff?
It's I got coders and stuff, you know, and we're gonna work with some with Vietnam, and it's just something for our own niche community. Now, is it big? It's only big for it's big here, okay, and it'll serve our community here. But as far as like this is not something where it's an international national play, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it is a national play because there's a pho shop in between here and Texas in a desert road somewhere that they serve pho because they love that. They might serve Chinese food, but they have pho also.
Yeah.
And we see this because why? You know, it's localized tasting, right? But it's to every opportunity. Like if I'm going to Big Bear to snowboard or ski,
I want to know that there's Vietnamese food up there.
Correct.
Please.
Now, yeah, you know, and I'm not setting the bar of here. I'm just glad they make Vietnamese food. I'm not going to even judge it. Oh, it's not the same. Like you said, they have to tone it down for the locals, right?
Right.
So don't judge it. And then I'm going to speak on one other thing, like elevated food. If you have a pho restaurant in Beverly Hills, do you think it's going to be $15.99? Their rent is damn fucking $40
like
a square foot.
It's a $35 bowl of pho.
Yeah, and you pay it because it's the location of where you're at.
Crustaceans.
Yeah, if you're going to eat pho on the beach overlooking the ocean.
If you're going to pay.
I will pay to eat a big fat bowl of pho overlooking the ocean, okay? So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So all those guys, like, do you see the value where you're eating it? Or just go to the hole in the wall, get your $12.99, be happy with it. Cool. I have my days. That's what I go for. And I have my days where I will pay for the value of it, you know?
So I want to wrap this up with the call to action. I think all of us agree that there needs to be sort of like a place, right? A platform. And we're going to figure that out. Hopefully we want to hear your thoughts about how do we coalesce? How do we aggregate the community, the Vietnamese community globally, including in Vietnam, our homeland? How do we get our brand elevated, the brand of the Vietnamese throughout the world, to a place where we all can step out of the airport and go, you know what? I'm Vietnamese.
So
it was good.
If you feel you're Vietnamese, I don't care if you're white Vietnamese, Mexican Vietnamese, Vietnamese. If you feel that you want to have this conversation, hit up Ken, me, and Dana. Okay. I don't care where you come from and you champion this culture. Let's have that conversation. You're even married into this culture. Let me have that conversation with you. Okay. Because I respect those that respect our culture. That's bottom line, period. And those that walk away from it, cool. Hope you come back one day. Yep. You know what I mean? And that's it. You know, I don't have hate for you. You just had to do your thing. But if one day, I'm going to leave that door cracked, man. Keys under the mat. Come on in. You know what I mean? So either way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have the platform for it.
I'll send the digital code to open up the door. I don't have keys anymore. I don't like, I'm
not in the future. There's people in the house with guns.
Thank you, everybody.
Call us. Hey. We'll be back another day.
Boom.
Back another day.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.